trying to get on him. That was, he was, you guys were sneaky. That was, that's really hard. He's great though. I love that guy. Thanks for having me here today. It's been probably 3 years, I think, since the last time I'd been here. So I was looking for my old notes, thinking I could just use them again. But, you know, Lord wouldn't let me find them, so I had to do them. So I had to muster something up. So today, Gia asked me if I would talk to you about parenting, tough mom moments, and as I prayed about it and thought about it, I thought, oh my gosh, this is like every other day, right? Before I go on, I want to just kind of get a feel for where you are. How many of you are first-time moms? Okay, how many are on your second? Third? Three? Well, more than three? Oh, you brave souls. Thank you. How many of you also work either outside the home or do some extra work inside the home? Nice, nice. Well, okay, so you moms know what tough days are like, right? We all have had tough days, and when I was thinking about this, I was thinking, you know, this just happened yesterday to me, you know. This is what or how a tough day begins for Gina. I'm surprised. I'm awakened by my alarm, not the kids. I quickly turn off the alarm. I jump out of bed. The floor's cold. I look for my slippers. I go to the kitchen. Everyone's asleep still, except for Greg. He's already gone off to work. I can't believe it. I don't have to make him breakfast. I'm going to have my quiet time. Today I'm going to have it. It's the day. So I think I'll first make a cup of coffee. I pop my Keurig in. Back then when I was, you guys, we didn't have Keurigs. We had our Cuisinart or whatever, and we set the timer. But I got my cup of coffee, and I got my Bible, my journal, my favorite pink pen so I can start writing. And I sit down, and I start to pray, and I just say, Lord, thank you for this moment. Oh, there's my coffee. It's done. Let me go get it. Now I'm sitting back down, and I take a sip, and I'm, like, so excited. Just a cup of coffee, and it's still quiet a couple minutes later. So I open up my Bible, and I start reading in 1 Corinthians, and starts here, saying, Paul, called by the will of God to be apostle of Christ to the church of God that is in Corinth, to those sanctified in Christ Jesus, called to be saints together with all of those in every place, call upon the name of the Lord. Grace and peace to you from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. Stop, take another sip, put the cup down. I go back and Paul continues to say, I give thanks to my God. Wah! Oh, I give thanks to my God always for you because, wah! Sorry. I give thanks to you for my God always, the God that was given you in Christ Jesus. Wah, wah! That in every way, you enrich in him all speech and the knowledge, even as if he will save you to the end. Wah! Really, God? It's done. That was the beginning of the rest of my day. Sound familiar? You guys have days like that? Maybe that was your day this morning. Maybe it was yesterday. And if you haven't had it, it will probably be tomorrow. These kiddos that we have days where they just don't comply with the order of our events, do they? Say today, maybe you had to rush and you couldn't think clearly and now you're frustrated. You're looking around for your fishy crackers or whatever those snacks are supposed to be. Where's that perfect sippy cup? Ah, they're all dirty. Oh no, where's the pacifier? I gotta find that pacifier, we won't make it through. You feel your blood rising, right? The blood pressure's going up, and all of a sudden those words, unkind words, are about to slip off your tongue, and you see the look in your child's face, those big eyes looking back at you, and you think, ugh. So you start to explain, and they ask questions. You start answering those 20 questions. Now you look at your watch. You've completely run out of time. You don't have time to shower, so what do? You pop your clothes on, put your hair in a bun, grab whatever's left of your lamplighter survival kit to get here on time, and you get here. You drop your kids off. You're sitting down. You're grabbing your snack, and you're like, really? What is this? Or you think, what is that smell? Did I really forget to brush my own teeth? Because that's a day. That is a bad day, and sometimes you just want to be done. We all are in this together. We're all having them. I want to, you all know that, not all of you, but you might know that I'm into exercise and I'm into fitness, so I'm going to have you guys do an exercise with me, but you won't have to sweat. It'll be really easy. All I want you to do is just sit here and relax. And you're going to, if you have a cup of coffee or something, I want you to just hold it. Just enjoy it for a moment. I want you to take a deep breath, and you're going to close your eyes. Bear with me. I'm not going to make you massage each other or anything crazy. Just close your eyes and take a deep breath and just kind of count to 10. And I'm going to play a song for you, and I just want you just to listen to it and just keep breathing. Okay, you can open your eyes. See, you're not alone. You're not the only one that has bad days. People have to actually write songs about bad days. Sometimes we cry, we get angry, we listen to sad songs, we write sad songs, just like this guy Daniel Potter, but so did King David. You know, in Psalms 55, if you want to read songs, sad songs or poems or encouraging ones, the Psalms is the best place to go. King David even wrote in 55, he was complaining one day. He was so angry. He was so frustrated. He was feeling oppressed, and he was all the emotions that we feel sometimes when we're having these days. And he actually wrote, if I only had wings like doves, I would fly away, and then I'd be at rest. We feel like that. Sometimes our days are so difficult, and we have those feelings. Can you relate to King David? I know I can. In Ecclesiastes in 1:9, it says, there is nothing new under the sun. If we think about that for one moment, how encouraging is it to know that moms all the way back to Eve have had bad days? We've had tough times, potty training, ear infections, meal prepping, worrying about providing, broken toys, broken dishes. If we look at history, it helps us give perspective. It would also be amazing to walk with Eve and to hear her first concerns about her kids, her two boys fighting all the time, right? And then sit with Mary and listen to her about her unexpected pregnancy. Whatever you're going through today and now with your kids and family, just take comfort in knowing that there is nothing new under the sun. God sees all these things. I'm going to get to it. We have three things I'm going to go over, and I want you guys to consider and ask yourselves as you look at your parenting and all that. But before we do, I want us to start with the same premise. First of all, I'm going to make the assumption that we all want to teach all of our children how to know and love Jesus and how to worship him. So that's our premise with where we're heading, with how we look at these issues. We have just this one opportunity to raise our kids. This is a short little window. And we're not perfect. We're all sinners. We need Christ, his wisdom and discernment. We know that our beautiful little children are also sinners. In Romans 3:23, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. If anyone is surprised by that, come talk to me later or talk to your table leader, because we'll help you see that if you haven't seen it yet. But ultimately, we want to get to the heart of our kids. In Romans 10:9, it says, we want our children to confess that Jesus is their Lord and believe in their hearts so they will be saved. So we need to start by communicating, teaching, and modeling this moral behavior. Then when we attempt to see moments where we need to change or correct or discipline, we'll be able to do that. And all of that is important to getting to the heart of our kids. But what's tricky is getting all these biblical principles and putting them and applying them into our parenting. We know that God's principles are true and constant. They're never changing. His word says in Psalms, the precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandments of the Lord are pure, enlightening the eyes. And then there are other verses that tell us, do not let kindness and truth leave you. Bind them around your heart. Parents, in Colossians, don't exasperate your children. Mark 12, love your neighbor as yourself. All these precepts are true, but they can all look different in how you implement them with your families. So I put on your table some questions, and I want you guys to just discuss those amongst yourselves. I kind of thought we would have already talked about it, but I forgot about that. I was going to tell you to look at them earlier. But go ahead and look at them. Some of them are how you were parented as a child and how you parent. How is that different? And then I don't have the questions right in front of me. And the second one is, y'all can read these. And what kind of learner are you versus your siblings or your friends if you're an only child? And the last one is, talk about what your schedule is like today as a mom. What is a typical day like for you? So go ahead and do that. Okay, get you guys back. Sorry, that was so short. I know, it's like, as I hear your guys' conversations, I'm like, wow. And you're in bigger groups. I was kind of expecting two or three people in a group, but that's good. I'm glad you guys were able to open up with each other. So think about those questions. The first one, you all were parented or parent probably a little bit different from each other, right? And some of you parent exactly the way your parents raised you, and some of you do it exactly opposite of what your parents did. Everyone, we've all made mistakes along the way, and that's why we adjust and we change. And that tells us from the beginning there must not be one way of parenting, or we would all have it figured out by now, right? Just like God, our Father does not encourage or discipline us in the same way. He treats us all differently. There's a time for grace, there's a time for mercy, and there's a time for discipline, there's a time for natural consequences for us all to learn. So when we talk about the biblical principles and applications, here's an example of how Scripture tells us one thing we're supposed to do. In Leviticus, it tells us to respect age, right? We're supposed to respect people who are older than us. It's a command to do that. But does the Bible tell us specifically how to do it? Not really. So we have to use wisdom. We use traditions. We look at social customs. That all influences our application, right? Let me give you an example. I respect my mom and mother-in-law totally opposite. When I'm having a conversation with my mom on the phone and we're going on and she starts saying something, I'm like, oh, that's not right. I want to just say it, right? But with my mom, I cannot do that. In our culture, it is totally inappropriate to correct your elders. You just don't do that. I could never say that. Even if I know she's dead wrong, I'll let her do that, and I just pray for her that she gets to, you know, where I'm at, right? You know, no, just kidding. But that God reveals to her whatever it is that he wants to. And usually he does. Usually he comes back, or she comes back to me and says, Gina, I have this epiphany. Guess what? You know, and I'm like, oh, yay. But my mother-in-law is totally opposite. If I don't tell her something right away, she's insulted that I don't respect her enough to just be up front. She's like, I'm not fragile. You can just tell me. So these are two different people that I have to respect completely different. And that's how we need to be with our children. We need to know who they are. We need to study them so that we can love and treat them accordingly. The other question on there is looking at your day. I kind of wanted you to jump to that one, your schedule. The reason why I want you to look at these things, because I want to address your mindset of these things as we get into some of the other issues, because I know when we talk about parenting, y'all have these questions like, what do I do for this discipline issue? And so there's all this preface that I want you to have the right mindset before you start thinking about all that. So when we look at your schedule, there's an area I want you to look at. What is your purpose each day? Okay, we can have this generated list. I started hearing some of you say, oh, I got all these errands I have to do, or I got to do this, I got to drop this kid off at school. So there's all this stuff that we have to do. A sample might be wake up, get dressed, go to the bathroom, breakfast, coffee, dress the kids, drop these kids off to preschool. Oh, I got a play date with this kid. Oh, I got to get home for nap time. I got to get groceries. I got to have lunch. On and on and on. So I'm sure, and not to mention laundry, dishes, you know, our own self-care. But if your schedule and your day is just this list of stuff to do and there's not a purpose behind it, that's what it becomes. This Groundhog Day, a list of things, you become robotic about it, has nothing. There's no purpose behind it. There's just all this stuff. And in that moment, you are missing that little season of your kid's life if all that stuff becomes so important. You have training opportunities for your kids right now to teach them to love Jesus. And it's just this little window. For those of you who are going to send your kids off to preschool, that's 0 to 3. Or if you're going to go kindergarten, 0 to 5. Or maybe you're going to homeschool for a little while. At some point, it's still a small window. So I want you, the first thing I want you to consider of the three things I'm going to ask you to look at is to consider giving up some of the control in your agenda, in your schedule. Look at your schedule. And do you have all the control? Is God on the throne or are you when you look at your day? So it's going to begin with you all, us moms, at home. And from the time I was a little girl, or when I could start thinking about this, I couldn't wait to have my own home. I couldn't wait to decorate it, and my room was going to look like this, and my kids' rooms were going to look like that. Whether you have an apartment, a townhome, whatever, this is your home, and you have the privilege and responsibility to keep that in order. I get that. And it's a place that we choose to make like a refuge for our family. It's a place we imagine where we'd have traditions, food, family, laughter, holidays, where we're going to put our Christmas tree, where we're going to hang our stockings. We pick towels to decorate our bathroom. We choose our room, the color to paint the walls. We decorate in our traditional or mid-century modern style. I'm learning this. I get it. It's ours. I do that too. And typically our husbands don't want to be a part of it. Sometimes they do, but a lot of times they're like, you know, you just deal with that. I don't have time for that, you know. So we make it ours. This is a place where we begin to express ourselves, right? This is our little thing. And it, because we say it's our little thing, that's the beginning of our struggle. We forget that everything we have and we are from God. First Chronicles tells us that everything we have comes from above, and we can only give because he first gave us. We struggle because in practice, and we have the best of intentions, I get it, I'm just like you, we try to do good things. We figure this is more efficient than that, that's more efficient than this, so this is what we're going to do, right? And we tell everybody else in our family, this is what we're going to do because this is what works. This is the way, this is the only way, thus it's the right way. Not allowing God to make any changes, because we're controlling that. We reinforce that. Again, in and of itself, those things, those methods are not bad. They're just preferences, and they're not bad until they become bad. We get frustrated, we get angry when things aren't going appropriately. If we put everything in this order and all of a sudden this is over here and we can't find it, we're getting angry at our kids or our husband. Why can't you put this back? Or whatever those things are for you guys. All those things become more important than people. Sometimes we hesitate inviting people over to our home because it's not in order. That's more important. Our home, our routines, and how we do things. At least for me, ladies, and my girlfriends, it's been their issues. I ask them about it too. That becomes our idol. That becomes the idol of life, where that is more important than people, and our little children. And we are so good at pretending it's not and justifying, oh, it's orderliness, it's cleanliness. You know, we're so savvy and we can be subtle at that, but it still can seep in and take control. If we relinquish that control in our home and relinquish some of that schedule and view people more important, then our expectations won't be so challenged. And just maybe we'll be a little more patient to our kids and we won't have as many bad days because we're not controlling all that so much. So I'm just asking you to ask in your own life, do you have control, so much control of that area that it's become an idol over loving your husband and your kids? The second thing I want you to ask and look at is, now that you have this place and you have these children, where are you spending most of your time? Are you out and about most of your day taking your kids from one place to another? Do you have that list, those five errands that you have to go? I'm going to stop at Trader Joe's. I got to go to Costco, and then I'm going to go to Whole Foods or whatever those errands are. These were mine. I'm there with you. I did the same thing too, and I still do at times. Or are there times where you're like, you know what, I have so many things to do, I'm going to drop the kids off at grandma's because, you know, I can get everything done faster. And then when you do that, you're thinking, well, now I'll do even more, right? Or sometimes you just think, you know what, I have to take them with me and it's just so miserable. Forget it, I just don't even want to do it. I'm going to ask somebody else to take them. But the real question here is, I want you to ask yourselves, are you characterized by that? Because once again, all that stuff's not bad in and of itself, okay? It's just, is that what you do regularly? Would you say that's how you characterize yourself? You know, God chose you guys to be the moms of your kids, no one else. He's chosen you to be the teachers and coaches for them. So I'm going to ask you now, where are you spending that time? Are you training them in your home, or are you out in the field? I like to use this analogy, especially now that it's Olympic season. We have our athletes, right? They're just amazing. But do you think they learned those skills overnight? Do you think they learned them the second or third time? Of course not. They've been training for years to be as good as they are. And then now they have the Olympics as their test. I was watching Michaela, I think her name is, the American skier, the other day, and watching how she goes through her regimen of training, her nutrition. They didn't show her out on the slopes. They showed her in the gym. They showed her coach doing all these leg presses and squats and planks and weights on her back, doing push-ups and all these things to strengthen everything in this controlled environment so that when the weight was all taken off and she went out and did her sport, she was able to perform better. Her nutrition was important. Her rest was important. All of that was important so that she could be successful out there. The same gym, the same coach, same equipment. I do the same thing, those of you know who I'm a personal trainer, I do that same thing with my clients. I have runners, I have soccer players, I've got horseback riders, and everybody's a mom, I think, all except for two people. We do training to strengthen and balance the whole body. It's a controlled environment. I'm there observing what they can do and what they can't. If an exercise looks too difficult or compromising, I stop. We readjust and modify things. I'm trying to develop their strength to help them be more stable and in shorter or crazy positions that are less compromising. I change it all up. Once they've mastered that exercise, then I can move them up to the next. It's kind of like with your children. Once they've mastered this, you open up the boundaries and teach them something new. So that's what I do with my clients. But I continue to push them and challenge them, and then I retest them. So now, when they're not with me, and they're out running their marathon or competing in their sport, they're faster, they're more agile, they have more endurance, and Lord willing, no injuries. But that's where the test is. But I'm training them here first. So my question for you is, are you training your children or your athletes at home in your controlled environment? And I don't mean control like what I was telling you to get rid of before. I'm talking about an environment where there are less variables. You want to develop their strengths and their skills so that when they go to church, when they go to their friend's house, when they go to school, play dates, or Target, they have the skills to emulate a life of godly worship. And that would look like things like self-control. Do they have respect for others wherever they're at? Do they have respect for people's property? Do they have that self-control? Do they have the type of skills that they need? You are their parents, so between you and your husband, you need to decide what the behaviors are that they need to do and what skills they need to accomplish that. Based on, you know, your family, what happens in your home, their age, and their development, okay? This is what you will need to start determining what and how to teach them. Again, remember, small window. We got this little time. So take advantage of that. You moms are in the middle of it, and I keep saying small window, and you're thinking, this is lasting forever. When am I going to get out? But really, trust me, it's like my kids are 25, 23, and 20. And I just like, it seems like, you know, well, not yesterday, but a little while ago when they were that little like you guys. It's like a couple blinks of an eye, and it'll be over. So take the time right now while you have it, while you're at home. Where are you training your kids? It's difficult to train and reinforce when there are too many variables to influence their ability just to comprehend that. Think about you when you're reading a book, and if the alarm's going off, the laundry bell's going, the timer's going off, your kids are asking for this, you're trying to read, really? How much have you actually comprehended? And think about that for your children. If you're taking them out, well, I'll teach them while I'm at Target, and there's all these other things, you're like, why are my kids misbehaving? I've been telling them. Well, you know what? You haven't been teaching them. You haven't been doing the parenting that they need for where they're at in their development, because there's too many things coming in. We need to study our kids, and we need to know them. And it's easier for us to also learn about them in our own home, because there's less variables for us as well. And there's less distractions for us. There's not those million things on that grocery list to go get. We can focus on teaching our kids. You can evaluate what they are ready for when you're in your home and what they are not. You can choose what basic skills they need and then when to expand them for the next step. Here's an example, like when you're at home, this is what I remember doing. If I decided to stay home for playtime, or not for playtime, for teaching time, it starts right when they wake up, okay? You just, or you start right at breakfast, so you're their meal time. Practice during feeding. Practice please and thank yous and appropriate behaviors and be kind and praise them throughout that whole mealtime. That's teaching. And at the end of it, give them a wipey so they can start learning how to clean their table. Praise them for that. That is a teaching moment. So that diaper changing, the way they communicate you with you with diaper changing instead of kicking and throwing things around, there's another time for teaching. So everything at home can be that teaching opportunity where you can begin just investing in them. If you're at home and you do that, and we looked at that schedule, you're at home, you're teaching through mealtime, and then you do your playtime, and then you do maybe your Bible time, and you guys have Bible time together, whatever all those things are in order, then you start noticing they're hungry. Well, then you're at home, you can go get their snack. You're not in Target. Yeah, that was my big mishap is Target, so I'm going to just use that. I'm in Target. They're starving, and I'm like, one more thing on my list, and they're crying, and I'm like, okay, I'm just getting, the water's right down there, and I'm running through. Oh, no, this is all candy before the water, and they're losing it, right? If you're at home, that doesn't happen. You know, you can just say, okay, it's snack time. Here's your snack, and then right after snack, they're still tired. Okay, now you know it's nap time. And they're trusting you. They're trusting you that you're going to take care of the order of that day so they can have what they need so that when they are being taught, all those other variables are okay. Does that make sense? Then you don't have as many fights about going down for naps because they're done. They're ready. And they know that when they get up, they're going to go do something fun with you later. Then, when they are down, is when you can have your coffee or, I know, your laundry, wash the dishes, all that other stuff, too. But try to take a little time for yourself, too, because they're going to be up again and they're going to need you. So you got to take care of you as well. But can you see that when you have no other agendas, you don't get as impatient with them? There's not going to be as much of those conflicts and battles going on. So let's look at the opposite scenario. When you are out in the morning doing those errands or visiting friends, we tend to lose track, right? We're like talking to your friend and like, I'm respecting you. You're going to have one more thing to talk about. I'm going to listen because I want to give you eye contact. But here's this stuff going on down here. You're like, stop that. And then you don't look and you're talking to one more thing we're going to talk about. Before you know it, your kids are back there. They're writing on the walls or do whatever they're doing. You haven't addressed those where you think you are. And you have made all this more important, which is very good, right? In and of itself, that's great. I'm respecting you. I'm looking you in the eyes. I'm loving you and your love language. But I'm not loving these guys back here. And what I've actually done by making this more important, I've taught them it's okay to ignore mom. It's okay to keep doing this. She's not reinforcing this, whatever she's saying, whatever I was telling them to do or not to do, because I wasn't able to redirect them or correct them. So caution on that, what you're doing when you're out and about and all those distractions. Then what happens a lot of times is then we get frustrated. We're thinking we're communicating to them. We're thinking that we've told them what to do and what not to do, and we think they know better, but now they're tired. We're tired. We're getting frustrated. They start screaming, and we're like, okay, we got to get home. We just need to abort this and get off. So we get in our cars. They're crying the whole way home. They fall asleep in the car, and now you've like, I lost half of my nap time that I need to do whatever I needed to do. They're sleeping in the car. You get home, and sometimes they're awake, and they're not ready to go back to sleep. Other times, you know, they are out, and that's good. But again, you could have controlled some of that by knowing that this is my training time. I was using my training time for me. Not all the time, but I'm just saying sometimes that's, you need to ask yourselves those kind of questions. So that's why I really like when they're little is that training time takes place in the home. When you do that and you train them at home, you can go out and then test them. You're not going to take them out and say, here's the final exam, right? You're going to do little quizzes. And one of the things I like to do at Target, spend more money at Target than I should, but I would start and say, okay, you know, Zach, we're gonna go to Target, kid, and I would be proactive and say, can you help mommy? I've got to get these two things on my list. So this is it. I'm not really going shopping to Target for my two things. I'm going to Target to teach Zach how to walk through Target. So I'm going to buy two things on my list. And I share with Zach what they are. And he's like, okay, can you be a big helper and help mommy get these things? And then when we're done, we're not going to look at anything else. We're not buying any toys. We're not buying any candy. We're going to go home, and then we're going to build a fort with the sofa cushions. Can you help mommy do that? That's what we're going to do at the end of this. And I make sure he understands, and I have him repeat it back so that I know that he knows. I can't just say it once and go, I told you. How come you know? You got to remind him. And so the whole way to Target, we're having this conversation. Woohoo, we're going to Target. We're going to get you things on my list. Right, Zach, what are they? And he'll shout them out. And so we go through that. I'm making this fun. I'm teaching him how to do this. We go to Target. We get our things. Literally, I'm like, I'm running because I want him to be successful. I want him to know how important this is. So we're doing it. We get it. We buy our stuff. We get in the car. Now we're all excited. We're singing and happy, you know, and talking about the fort. We get home. I barely put everything away. We get in, build the fort. And it's, I praise him. I thank him. I encourage him so that the next time we go to Target, I can make that test a little bit bigger. And usually that's how it worked. Now, if he wasn't feeling well, there's other stuff that may not have been so successful. But if all those other things are right, there's a greater chance that you have this opportunity to teach them that. So the next time we go to Target, we're going to walk through the toy aisle. And we're going to actually, that's our exercise. We're going to pretend that we're looking. We're not going to buy anything. Can we do that? You know, that's all we're going to do. The next time, you know what? He's mastered these. I'm going to say, we're going to buy one toy today, you know, and just I avoid it making it a bribery thing. I make rewards at the end and praise him for all the things he was able to do so that one day. But if we go in there for the final exam and we haven't done any of these other things, you've got to expect that it's going to be crazy. It could be pretty ugly. You all know that. You've already done it. I've done it too. I'm like, oh no, I got to go get a birthday present. And we go, shoot, here we go, right? And it happens. It happens. But if you try to be proactive and plan some of these things beforehand, the day you have a party that you forgot to get a gift, maybe then they'll be able to do it. Or maybe that's the day you leave them at home. Does that make sense? So the home is that training place. I know a lot of times we want to get out, and so there are times for that. But for the most time, remember the short window, and that will give you the encouragement to get through all those days. And you want your kids to be successful. Okay, the last thing I want to... Are we on time? We okay? Okay, the last thing I want you to ask yourself is in terms of being this thinking parent, learn how to assess. A lot of parents, I remember when I was young, I had this parent, call a parent, help me kind of thing. So I would call whenever I had these things because I didn't know how to think through how to handle a situation. So I had this great 911, call mom. But it wasn't my mom, but there were these moms that were there for me. But I want to help you guys look at situations and learn how to assess. What kind of questions do you ask? Because I know you, I just remember thinking, I don't even know where to start, right? But we talked about before, we want to make sure we're purposeful, right, in giving up some of that control over our agendas. We remember trainings in the home. The third thing now is to assess. So as we study our kids, I want you to learn how what makes them tick and what ticks them off. It's all about asking questions. I'm going to show you a video clip in a second, and I want you to watch it, and then I want you to look and just observe and tell me what you see. And after the video, talk to maybe break up in two or three and just list your observations. I want you to look at it. I find this kind of disturbing. It just kind of hurts me. But no judgments, just observations on the behaviors and things that you see happening. Look at mom. Okay. Right? I told you it was disturbing. So go ahead, and I want you guys to just, or maybe just shout out to me, just some observations that you saw. Mom was ignoring, appeared she was ignoring him. Anything else? The mom? Yeah, she was being controlled, right? Anything else?
He wanted to get out, and she wasn't letting him out, so it seemed like that's maybe why he was upset. He
was maybe.
Well, it looked like she was ignoring him, but then she knew very well that that guy was offering him a lollipop, so she wasn't totally ignoring him, so she was very, very intentional about how she was reacting to his behavior. Because she did, you know, she saw the lollipop go in, she's like, oh no, he can't have that. So she wasn't not engaged.
She didn't know, we don't know why she didn't want him to have the lollipop. I mean, for all we know, he doesn't know what a lollipop is. I don't know. He could be allergic to sugar. He could use it as what? I mean, we don't know. Those are like the kind of judgment things that I, you know, we don't know. What else do you see? What about the clerks? The other clerk, I don't know if you saw her, was there. That was happening over there, and she was over here. She kind of was like, what the heck, you know? She didn't know. She's just, you know. Anything else?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you wonder, could he even get out on his own? You know, I don't know. So when you look at a situation, to just observe, like we can't help but not see things through our own lenses. So you automatically have judgment or reasons why, first of all, who was filming this? You know, who does that, right? I'm like, I want to get this on YouTube. I don't know. But there's so many things to ask. Is the boy allergic? You know what? Would he have run away if he weren't in the cart? Does he have special needs? I saw him pulling his eyebrows. I'm like, is he so frustrated he's pulling his eyebrows? So there's so much stuff going on that we really, really don't know. But what I wanted you just to look at is, can I assess a situation without having a judgment call? That's the first thing. The other thing is, we look at that and we automatically go, wow, behavior problems, this is all over the place, and what do we do with that, right? So I want to read to you what the definition, according to Webster, of what a behavior is, okay? So this part sounds pretty clinical. A behavior is just a manner of conducting oneself or a response to its environment. Basically, it's a response to stimuli, an action or function, the way one operates. Everything we do is behavior. Then I want to ask you all another question that we need to look at. What do you think is sensory behavior? The sensation or physical sense and behaviors that are the way in which a person acts in response to a perception by the senses or in response to a particular stimuli. So both of them are responses to stimuli. Is there a difference between behavior and sensory behavior? All behaviors are sensory, but not necessarily to the same degree, because a behavior is a response to a stimuli. So depending on what you see, what you hear, which are senses, you respond accordingly. So sensory behavior, we have an assumption that maybe there's a dysfunction with the sensory processing system. Or maybe not dysfunction, maybe it's just delayed onset of development. So maybe some of our kids aren't quite there yet. Now, you probably can get why I see that, because of my kids all being on the spectrum, they have developmental delays, so I'm aware of that. But so now I can see that all children in their development are at different places. So they may not have technical developmental delays, but they are different in their development. So I look at those things and I ask those things. That's why I even talk about behavior. Are they developmentally ready to learn that skill or task? Are we putting that expectation on too soon or not soon enough? That's the only reason why I even bring that up. A lot of times, there's so much stress put on their little bodies because they don't know how to process it yet. If their senses aren't working appropriately and their brain's not ready, they're not going to know how to handle it. There's so much going on. So in those moments, it's like us, that whole fight or flight thing. Us moms, we have the superpower when it comes to our kids in danger, right? Just all of a sudden, whew, this urge and boom, we pick our kids up if they're running in the middle street or whatever. Or if we're being chased by something, for the life of us, we'll run as fast as we can. That's the same thing that the kids got going on in them. If they're not ready for that, if they don't understand, so maybe they lash out in a bad word or they hit somebody because they're not sure how to process that. But that's for us to know if they're able to do it. And if they are, that's when you help coach them and direct them. But if they're not, it's probably safer to not put them in that environment yet until they're ready to handle it. Again, the reason why I'm bringing all this up, because I know we're all thinking, you know, oh, the problem, you know, the behavior problem things, right? That's what we come, that's what comes up next. And it's just that. A lot of times, again, here's Webster saying it's an expression of an emotional maladjustment. In children, it could be as simple as nail biting, that negative attitude, the hostility. But the problem behavior is when we socially define it and we have concerns, where it's undesirable, it's an undesirable norm of society, and then that's when it elicits some form of correction or discipline. Okay, that's where we all jump in. Okay, problem behaviors, yeah. Now what do we do about it? How do we do it? How do we get to the heart? All that. So in all of that, that's why it's so important to be proactive in your thinking, to know your kids, figure it out in your home, in your environment, so that when it's when they exemplify that, then you're able to look at it and start assessing and asking questions and going back to, can they handle this? What caused this? Some of those questions I have here, and I would like you to start thinking about in being intentional and being that thinking parent, is asking, just like this clip, what actually is happening in this situation? What happened before the boy was put into the cart? Do we know? What do you think caused it? Or now think about some of your situations. I mentioned this earlier, like the target. Is it time to abort this? Or and how do we do it? How do you graciously pull out of that? So some of these are reactive questions and some of them are proactive, but the whole point of thinking about them ahead of time is proactive. So you can expect that, okay, and you all know this, you all are brilliant ladies, you're smart, you still will not be able to think of every single situation that's going to occur. You can't anticipate everything. But the fact that you know that and you start asking these questions, you are being intentional and you are being proactive about it. So that when they do occur and you have to react, you're better equipped to do that. Okay? And so hopefully you've also eliminated some of those extra variables that you wouldn't have had you not started training back in the home. So, anyway, sorry about that. I turned two pages instead of one. When you have all those questions and you start asking them about a particular behavior and you say, okay, most of the answers to those questions are no, like, what were they? Some of them. Is my child sick? Is my child tired? You know, some of the practical things to evaluate the situation. If most of them are no, then maybe, well, for those things, maybe you shouldn't have them in that environment and they're not ready to be tested yet, right? But if some of them if they're no, then you should be, that was fine. You're supposed to be out there. But if they were yes, then you know I shouldn't have taken them out there. Same thing with some of the sensory things. You want to ask those questions. Are there sensory things that are preventing them to do this? Can they handle that or can they not? So take them out or put them back then. So all those kind of questions cause you to be that proactive thinking parent. And then it will allow you to know whether or not, once they have been able to handle that, and you know they can do it, and you know they understand it, then you know that you can follow through with the correction or the redirection or the discipline. And always remember, when you get to that point and you are implementing that, you always want to do that in love, never in anger. And patience and kindness, that's how God treats us. He doesn't do it that way with us. So do it like that. In every situation that you're going to handle, they're all going to be different. God gives us these principles, but he wants us also to be in direct communication with him, because we don't always know. We won't always know. But if we're on our knees and we're in prayer talking to him, he's going to make it really clear. So continue to study your kids. Continue to, you know, keep a relationship right in connection with the Lord. You're going to have new challenges all the time in every season. And remember, everything we've gone through, nothing is new under the sun to God. I want to read to you, or I'll tell you this last story, and it was part of something that Greg kind of mentioned in that thing that he said about me. But it was about this little boy, and I guess I don't have it right here, but it was about this little boy, and he was following this little caterpillar, and he was watching it for days and watched it eventually start making its cocoon and saw it staying there. And after a while, he noticed that it was starting to move. And he'd watch it and watch it. He was so excited. And it was starting to break through. And it was taking forever, but he was just enjoying watching it. He couldn't wait to see what was going to come out. And it was struggling and coming, trying to come out. And he thought, I just want to help this little guy. I can't wait to see him. So he poked at it and waited. Nothing happened. It still started squirming. He's like, I think he needs more help. So he poked at it again. And then eventually the caterpillar fell out. He caught it. And it was just kind of limp. And he held it in his hand. And then he thought, well, maybe I just better put it down in the sun. He put it down in the sun. And it started to wiggle a little bit. And it looked like it was trying to find some nectar or something. It was trying to do something. But eventually, it stopped moving. And the little butterfly had died. And he was so sad that he went and talked to his science teacher, you know. And the science teacher said that very thing that Greg was talking about. It was that, you know what? The struggle that that little butterfly had in the cocoon was so necessary. That tough time was so critical so that when he came out, he would be able to fly, so he would be able to live. But you wanted to make it easier for him, so you tore it and let him fall out, and he couldn't handle it, so he died. And the boy was crushed. He realized, I only wanted to help. Sometimes we're like that with our kids. We see them suffering and pain, and we just want to just stop it, make it all better. But it's in those times that they're going to really grow and learn. This last quote I wanted to say, I heard this the other day. It just hit me because I was having a bad day. It said, in your toughest times in life, that is when you will leave your greatest legacy. So anyway, just want to share that with you. Thank you guys for having me. And if you have any questions, I'll be here.